The following is a collaborative episode of both the Original Unoriginal Podcast and Cinemantics. Enjoy, and happy holidays! Hello, America! How are you?
Hello, America. How are you?
Welcome, one and all, to yet another wonderful, and it seems to be a holiday tradition, collaborative episode of the Original Unoriginal Podcast.
And Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad. Mostly bad.
I'm Jeff Hedley, the host of the Original Unoriginal Podcast.
And I'm Nick Melton, host of the latter podcast.
Cinemantics.
Yes.
That's what it's called.
Yes, it is.
Today, we are very proud to bring you what, on the old OUP side, we'll be referring to as the best movie of all time. And it's a very special episode for me personally. I don't know how you feel about it, Nick, but it's gonna be a barn burner.
A barn burner?
I don't know why I said that.
No barns are burned in the movie we're mentioning.
Sadly, no.
Sadly. They should have been.
Yes. Other things were burned.
They were.
Hair, strip clubs. Let's talk about this.
Let's talk about it.
So, ladies and gentlemen, as I mentioned, this is the best movie of all time. And, of course, it is from 2005, directed by David Steinman. This is, of course, Santa's Sleigh. Oh, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is Santa's Sleigh. I am a bit tipsy. We are recording this, as you listeners will note, on the same night in which we recorded episode 20 of the OUP. So we've enjoyed those hard spiced ciders. I'm a bit tipsy, but I'm ready to discuss this. Now, before we get started, Nick, if you don't mind, I'd like to tell a little bit of a personal backstory here.
Okay.
You know, as we actually talked about this in episode 20 of the OUP. On episode 20 of the OUP, we were discussing the fact that, you know, Smodcast, the Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier podcast, was really the podcast that got me into this business. But then came one fateful Sunday night. I'm flipping around the channels, and I turn it to Spike TV. And what do I see but one of my favorite professional wrestlers of all time, if not my favorite, Mr. Bill Goldberg, dressed as Santa, killing people in various delightful Yuletide ways.
Holiday-themed.
Yes.
Christmas ways.
Yes, yes. And I'm like, this is hilarious and entertaining. And so, of course, I go and IMDb that shit. And as soon as I do that, I discover that someone has mentioned that the film is discussed in a podcast known as the Greatest Movie Ever podcast. And, of course, I immediately sought it out. I was like, I want to hear this person who loves this as much as I did those 45 minutes or so that I got to see. And that's how I got to know Mr. Paul Chapman, the man who inspired my loving ripoff, The Best Movie of All Time, subseries of the OUP. And then my good friend Nick Melton here joined me as a co-host of the OUP for a majority of the episodes of 2009, and eventually spun off into his own podcast, Cinemantics. I feel like I'm telling this most of the story. Do you have anything to add?
Not really. I feel like you told the story of the podcast as well as, you know, Santa's Sleigh. Your knowledge of it.
Indeed, this film plays. The point is, this film plays a very heavy role in both of our really. Our getting into the podcasting world. So it felt only appropriate that when it comes to the holidays, it's time to talk about the film that really started it all with Santa's Sleigh. So Nick, I'm going to yield the floor to you because I've been talking up a storm. How do you want to kick things off?
Well, I think that the premise is so delicious that let's talk about it.
Okay, well, you want to do premise before cast?
Yes.
Okay.
I feel like in this instance it would be appropriate since none of the cast members are really that noteworthy except for Bill Goldberg, who you mentioned.
I would argue otherwise, but okay.
Well, I mean, like, it's not like they're not noteworthy, but it's, you know, they're not, like, famous actors.
Indeed.
A thousand years ago, no, that's cutting it a little far.
1,004 years ago.
1,004 years ago. Also, it should be noted that Santa is, in fact, not the jolly old elf who goes spreading holiday cheer to children. He is, in fact, the son of Satan.
Why not?
Why wouldn't he be? I mean, I got a very satanic vibe from Santa every time I saw him, even as a kid.
Really?
No. Anyway, 1,004 years ago, because this movie does indeed take place in 2005.
Yes.
Santa, the son of Satan, was going around just killing people on Christmas, which was, they say, the day of slayings.
Yes.
And people would be having masses to Christ, or Christ mass.
Ooh.
To
that
pray,
sounds familiar.
To pray that Santa would stop killing people. So this angel was like, hey, Santa, I'll challenge you to a game of curling.
Oh, that age-old wonderful sport, curling. I love it so.
It's the most manly sport they could have undertaken for this bet.
It's true.
If I win this game of curling, you will stop being evil for 1,000 years and give children presents. And if you win the game, I will go to hell. Clearly, the angel wins the bet, and Santa spends the next 1,000 years establishing a reputation as a good, jolly old elf who gives presents to children.
May I ask you a question, Nick Melton?
Yes.
What is this accent you're executing?
I was just thinking that you would probably ask me about the accent. I don't know what the accent is. It just felt appropriate.
Okay. Oh, but from there we come to present day, 2005, where young Nicholas Yulson, he's unhappy.
He shares my name and I like it.
Indeed, he's angsty and he lives in the town of Hell Township.
Is this a real place?
I believe it is. I feel like I've heard of this place. But anyway, he's not happy with the holiday season. He's never really enjoyed Christmas, not for the horrific reasons that Phoebe Cates despises Christmas in the film Gremlins, but for altogether other reasons. He just, you know, it just never really appealed to him, really. It all comes down to the fact that he wanted Optimus Prime, and he didn't get Optimus Prime.
That's unfortunate.
It's true.
In the Santa Claus, the stuff that they wanted was much more lame that they didn't get.
The Santa Claus with Tim Allen, is that
yes.
What you're saying? Mystery Date,
like,
and
Mystery
Oscar Mayer,
and Oscar Mayer
whistle.
I think that Optimus Prime is more of a valid excuse to be pissed at Santa.
It's true.
Than an Oscar Mayer weenie whistle.
But anyway, Nicholas, he lives in this town, and he's just all kinds of frump and angst. And he's not enjoying the holidays, basically. He works at a delicatessen owned by a wonderful Jewish deli owner, Mr. Green, played by the wonderful Saul Rubinek. We'll mention the full cast in a moment, because I can't help but have to at some point. The point is, he's working in this deli alongside his love interest, Mary, or Mac. As they don't really call her Mac that often in the actual movie. I just remember that her name was Mac from the post-credit scene that I don't think either we missed it because we actually had a DVD skip on the last scene. We didn't feel like we missed anything really.
No.
But anyway, she's referred to as Mac, and of course Santa comes to Hell Township to spread a little Yuletide fear, as he says. Christmas sure can scare the dickens out of people.
God, this movie is amazing.
It so is.
It's probably my new favorite movie of all time.
Really?
No. But it's definitely my new favorite Christmas movie of all time.
Nick, we sure are drunk.
Actually, I'm not. I'm just feeling deliciously...
You're feeling overwhelmed by the power of this movie?
Yes.
I think I'm a little tipsy.
Well, yeah.
I apologize.
We've had a lot of Mike's Hard Spiced Apple...
Oh my gosh, it was so good.
It was like cider, and it was heartwarming.
It's
plus paired with this movie just results in delightful.
And then we had our Monday night pints.
Monday night
Ben and Jerry
pints. So we feel pretty good with the world right now.
This movie for a movie about a killer Santa, it will leave you feeling so wonderful inside.
Unlike Silent Night, Deadly Night, which I haven't seen, but that's like a slasher movie.
It really is. Silent Night, Deadly Night, which is actually... I mean, when people think of a Christmas horror movie, that is, of course, the first one most people think of. It's legendary, you know. They're actually showing it at the Mixtape series, as we mentioned on a number of occasions on the OUP. I don't know. It doesn't have the appeal of this film.
Well, I'll tell you why. Silent Night, Deadly Night, as I mentioned, is a slasher movie. It's going to be bloody, and it's going to attempt to be scary and disturbing. Santa's sleigh is...
It's a comedy with horror elements.
Yeah, it's like a slasher comedy, but there's like no blood. Like, I don't recall a single drop of blood in this movie.
There is some like red patches on things that look like they could be blood.
Well, whatever. I mean, the most gruesome thing that happens is that James Caan gets his hand stabbed through the table with forks. That's the most gruesome thing, and that's at the very beginning of the movie.
And you know what?
The rest of it is just taking Christmas tropes and turning them into weapons, indeed, no matter how ridiculous it seems, and you laugh at it.
Yes.
It's a comedy. It's what it is.
And you know, you just mentioned the legendary James Caan, but I feel now it's time that we should discuss the cast of this film. As we mentioned, kicking things off, starring as the evil Santa, we have absolute professional wrestling legend, Bill Goldberg. Bill Goldberg, he came onto the scene on WCW, the old, the defunct Ted Turner-owned wrestling faction that I miss very dearly. He came on the scene in 1998, right around the time I started watching, actually. It was perfect, you know, just synergy, you know. And I thought he was just the bomb diggity, sir. I thought he was just wonderful. And he amassed a wonderful winning streak of over 100 victories. He was a world heavyweight champion. He was the best. And he was a Jew. I love a good Jew. You know I do.
That rhymed.
Indeed. And you know, this film is written and directed by a wonderful Jew, as you might guess, for a film that is so angry about Santa. You know, Paul Chapman, actually, I think he mentioned something. I gotta go ahead and just put this down, you know. As we mentioned, they do a fine episode about this film on the Greatest Movie Ever podcast. And with all due respect to Paul Chapman, I mean, I do love that episode, but I'm trying my damnedest to avoid repeating some of their points, because they make some wonderful ones. Like I said, this movie is really the nexus of my personal podcasting universe. This is where it all began, really. And I'm just pleased as punch. But anyway, Bill Goldberg is Santa. We have, as Nicholas Yulson, our young teenage boy hero, Douglas Smith, an actor who most of you people are probably familiar with for his work as the eldest son on the HBO series Big Love.
That's the only thing I've seen him on.
I've seen him in other things, but that is, as I mentioned, the most notable. His love interest, Mary Mac McKenzie, is played by Emily DeRaven. You might know her from the popular television series Lost. And I'm going to say this to you now, Paul Chapman, even though I doubt you're listening. She does not, in fact, look like Macaulay Culkin in a wig. She is, in fact, an adorable Australian lady with a really passable American accent.
I didn't even know she was Australian.
She's indeed Australian, and she's got a very passable American accent. So, good for you, TV's Claire. rounding out the cast, we also have Robert Culp as Nicholas's grandfather, and indeed the... we'll go ahead and just spill the beans on this one, because honestly, there's a Rankin Bass inspired backstory scene, which we discover the backstory of Santa in the style of those old Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and things of that nature.
By the way, that movie scared the crap out of me as a kid, because the snow monster, the abominable snowman, and the Rudolph, that's what it was, Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rocky!
Rocky, the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Yo, Adrian!
Yo, Adrian!
I got a red nose, but I'm persevering person.
You bastard!
You know that shot where the Abominable Snowman, like, climbs over the mountain and, like, roars, and they zoom in on it like they always do?
Yeah.
That shot scared the crap out of me as a kid, but...
I don't have, like, I'm not saying I have something less than fond memories of that, but it was never really my bag, I gotta tell you. Indeed, Robert Culp, he is the grandfather and indeed the angel who challenged Santa to that curling bet all those years ago.
Why the hell did they pick curling? Really?
Why the fuck not, Nick? Curling is a fascinating sport.
It actually felt surprisingly appropriate for the scene.
Yeah, especially when they rematch.
Like, they were all, like, stick figures and such, sort of. They were all, like, animated, like, stop-motion stick figures, almost. So, it felt... good that they picked a simple sport like that rather than, you know, sword fighting or like a fencing match. You know what I'm talking about.
Right. But curling is a fascinating sport, Nick. A lot of people hate on it, but I'll tell you, whenever curling's on the Winter Olympics, I am there. Awesome to watch large stones sliding across ice. That isn't the 65-year-old man that I am. But, indeed, Robert Culp. Robert Culp, who most people will probably remember as co-starring with Bill Cosby in the beloved 1960s television series I Spy. We also have beloved Canadian comedian and actor Dave Thomas, not to be confused with the Wendy's...
Although I wish it was the Wendy's Dave Thomas.
Yes, the Wendy's Dave Thomas, who's sadly no longer with us. But yes, Dave Thomas plays Pastor Timmons, a very corrupt pastor. He's a horny man.
He's a horny pastor.
And he enjoys the strippers. We also have Saul Rubinek, a fella, he's been on everything. He's just a delightful fella. I like to consider him sort of a cross between Adam Arkin and Mandy Patinkin, both of whom, who I realize, were both on the television series Chicago Hope. And maybe he was, too. That may be why I confuse him. But he's currently best known as one of the stars of the Sci-Fi Channel original series Warehouse 13. I think we should just go straight for the jugular and tell you a little something about the opening scene cast.
The opening scene is comprised of people who are more well-known than, like, the rest of the cast put together.
Indeed.
And they, like, all die in the opening scene. It's awesome.
Playing this very typical, disgruntled, dysfunctional American family.
Wasp
family who all hate each other. We have Rebecca Gayhart, who most people will, or at least I will personally know from her very, very brief role on the Showtime series Dead Like Me. We also have the one and only Chris Kattan of Saturday Night Live and various films fame I don't know if I should even bother mentioning their name. They're all a family by the name of Mason.
The Masons, but I feel like we should mention Chris Kattan's because his name rhymes. Jason Mason.
Jason Mason, yes. We have the nanny herself, Fran Drescher, as Virginia Mason, who appears to be the family matriarch. Yeah. We have Alicia Lauren as Beth Mason. I have no idea who the fuck she is. I don't mean to be... One of the daughters. And Annie Sorrell as Taylor Mason. I'm intrigued to note, though, that the family patriarch of the Mason family is not that high on the list.
He's uncredited.
How about that? And that is, of course, a legendary actor. You've seen him in films such as The Godfather and Honeymoon in Vegas. Indeed, James Caan. Don't you love those two selections?
I do.
He has a sort of a history with Vegas because he's also on that show Las Vegas. I do want to mention one other person, though, and that is, of course, the actor who plays a gas station attendant, Tommy Lister. He was actually in WWE very briefly in the mid-90s. This is actually before my time, but he played a character called Zeus. But most people know him, they know him now as being the tall, tattooed, imposing African-American prisoner on the prisoner boat in The Dark Knight, you know, the thing about...
The guy says, give it to me. I'll say that I took it from you by force.
Give it to me, and I'll do what you should have did 10 minutes ago. Yes. But most people actually will remember him as playing the part of Debo, the sort of villain of sorts of the first two Friday movies starring Ice Cube. That's how I know him best. He's Debo. He will always be Debo to me. As I understand it, he also makes an appearance in the Luc Besson film, The Fifth Element, with his Friday co-star Chris Tucker. But that's basically the cast you need to know. Everybody else is just incidental people being killed, or townspeople who have random, somewhat racist or inappropriate and offensive lines. And that is one thing we've got to talk about, Nick, right off the bat. I love the dialogue. I love the writing of this movie.
Man, the dialogue is amazing, yet it is terrible simultaneously.
It's so offensive. There are so many great lines in this movie. Do you have memorable quotes pulled up?
I do have memorable quotes, but I'm sure they focus almost entirely on strange things that Santa Claus says.
And I'm really sad. I'm seeing one quote right here, right off the bat, that I'm depressed. They actually have it censored on this page, which is the line, "I'm Santa Claus, not fucking Dracula." I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
Looks like Grandpa got run over by a reindeer.
Santa Claus reading a copy of A Christmas Carol. Boy, Christmas can sure scare the dickens out of people.
Leading to the best use of A Christmas Carol in history.
Yes.
Using the book as a projectile weapon.
Throwing it and clocking Nicholas Yulson on the head. To which he's not really, like, injured or anything. He's just kind of mildly inconvenienced. He's just... fucking ow. You know, it's so great. Oh my gosh. I don't even know where to...
Oh, I love this one. Gwen Mason in the opening scene says to Santa, "I've been good," and then Santa hits her with a table leg.
He certainly does. I mean, eventually, I'm going to have to go ahead and tell you, we're going to have to talk about some of the great kills in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're the best part. Apart from seeing Bill Goldberg say Santa lines in a really deep, gravelly voice.
Bill Goldberg. Oh, I want to talk very briefly about Bill Goldberg before we segue into that. And that is the fact that Bill Goldberg, where the hell are you? I miss you so. Bill Goldberg, most recently, he hasn't done much acting outside of this movie and a role in Universal Soldier: The Return, starring Jean-Claude Van Damme. He was also in The Longest Yard with Adam Sandler and Burt Reynolds. He's a very charming guy. He's one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. And you know, and fans of the OUP and Nick himself will know that I'm a big fan of the sports entertainment, the professional wrestling, as it were. I watch it for the writing. Don't hate, but the point is, Goldberg is just such a charming guy. Bill Goldberg, or Goldberg as he was simply known, he's just wonderful. And I mean, as Paul Chapman mentioned, he's a guy I can see him I could see him playing the villain and things, but I could also see him being kind of a viable action star. I really could. He's wonderful. He's so charming. He's not bad in this movie. His acting doesn't make you cringe. It really doesn't. This movie is so charming. I consider it to be on the level of, I was about to mention a movie that I don't think we'll have covered it by the time this airs. A certain film. Actually, I think it's your episode 11, to be quite frank. A certain film we watched one of the last times we were together. You'll recall which one I'm talking about.
Yes.
A film that stole our hearts. But, he's just great. And I miss him. Most recent thing he's been known for is he was the host of a sort of a reality show that was kind of like The Amazing Race with fast cars. He's come on Spike TV. It was called Bull Run. He was the host of that show, and I miss him just being around. I agree with Paul Chapman of the greatest movie ever podcast that this film should be perennial airing on Spike TV.
It's going to be perennial airing in my house wherever I end up living, because I'm going to go buy the DVD.
I would love to do that as well. This movie, I mean, maybe I'm just too tipsy. I mean, it didn't blow me away the way it did the first time I saw it. Maybe that's just
It didn't blow me away, but it was just so amusing, and it's so much more entertaining than the usual Christmas crap we have to watch every year.
I'm not going to speak so cynically about Christmas fare. I love me a hefty amount of the Christmas films, but every now and again you want something different, and you're going to be hard pressed to find some things more different.
And it's not scary; it's just amusingly. Amusingly horror.
Yeah, it's not even really a horror movie in many ways. It's just kind of an action comedy in many ways.
It's a black comedy, I would say.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is there's no, like, we call it a horror movie, but there's, you are never scared in this movie. There's nothing scary about this. Santa, it's Bill Goldberg. He's huge. He can't he can't jump out of anywhere and scare the shit out of you. He's gonna
yell at you, throw bombs at you, and run at you.
Throw bombs and destroy perfectly good outerwear. Can I rant, Nick?
Yeah, I didn't really notice the perfectly good outerwear destroyed.
You know me, Nick.
I do know you.
I'm pointing at you, and I feel like I'm pointing you in a very drunken fashion. I'm kind of obsessed with the alcohol running through my body.
You kind of are.
I can't help it. But I apologize, listeners. But no, as Nick will note, and as fans of the OUP will note, I am a fan of Goose Down outerwear, and I consider them to be a sort of a sacred genre of clothing.
Do clothing have genre?
They do when I say it.
Okay.
The point is, Emily DeRaven, star of this film, she's also known from Lost, as I mentioned, playing the part of Mac. Adorable cobalt blue down jacket, destroyed by a gift grenade, and or the ramming horns of Santa's Hell Deer, which is basically just a buffalo.
Painted gray,
yeah. I don't know why. I just remember the first time I watched this movie, and again this time, I was saddened to see such a perfectly piece of quality outerwear destroyed.
Although I think at the time, they were more worried that they were going to be killed.
Oh, I'm aware. But clearly this shows where my priorities lie.
Well,
that was a strange road to take. Nick, say something that doesn't make me sound like a nut.
Okay, I'm just looking over this memorable quotes thing, and I don't remember this little exchange in the movie, so maybe you can tell me, but Mary, Mac, if you will, says to Nicholas, "You hit like a girl," and then he says to her, "You kiss like a guy."
I'm thinking that's in the bit of the DVD that skipped.
Yeah, probably.
We assumed that what we missed in the last, like, it's literally like 30 seconds of film that I think was skipped on this DVD copy we got from Netflix, that I think we may have missed, you know, of course, the inevitable kiss of the two love interests.
Well, I think it's wonderful that one of the last closing lines evidently has gay subtext.
Yes, you hit like a girl, you kiss like a guy.
How would he know that, Nicholas Yulson?
Nicholas Yulson, though, I mean, he seems to be the typical, you know, homophobic, heterosexual 16-year-old boy, though. There is that wonderful line when he heads into the police department and finds the police chief in a very flamboyant Santa suit and says, "Don we now our gay apparel?"
That doesn't necessarily mean homophobia, it just means, oh my god, look at the police chief in that gay-looking Santa suit.
Indeed.
Although maybe that is homophobic, I don't know.
I don't know why I said that.
I prefer to give Nicholas Yulson the benefit of the doubt because I like Douglas Smith and he has my first name, so.
It's true.
Maybe I was just biased.
There are no uncharming performances. There are no bad performances in this movie. I mean, it's not like it's begging for good performances.
Well,
but
everybody realizes that they don't have to take it seriously, so they're just going to have fun with it.
Which is certainly a part of this film's charm. This film knows that it's a wacky black Christmas comedy about a killer Santa played by a professional wrestler. They don't take themselves too seriously.
I find that really refreshing, though, because all the other movies that try to be dark Christmas movies are seriously dark. Like, there's Silent Night, Deadly Night, which you've already mentioned. There's The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Awesome movie.
Which could function as a Halloween movie as well as a Christmas movie, but I always think of it as a Christmas film. That is creepy. It's a great movie, but you don't necessarily come out of it feeling invigorated.
I do.
Well, okay.
I love that movie. I mean, I'm only very recently discovering it. I actually didn't see it for the first time until 2006.
Really? I saw it when it came out in the theater.
Not to go off on a rant here, but when I first...
What the hell does rant mean?
We're going to just keep running that to the ground.
Well, that's because it's always funny.
Because Dennis Miller is very, very foremost in our minds tonight. What the hell was he doing, Nick? Why was he there?
I don't know.
Listeners of your podcast will have no idea what we're talking about. But the point is, The Nightmare Before Christmas, the first time I saw any promotion for it, terrified the shit out of me. To the point that I didn't want to see it. I was terrified of it, didn't want any part of it. And I mean, a decade, 13 years went by. And I mean, I'm not saying that I harbored the same fear. I mean, it didn't hurt that, you know, it went into the Disney vault not to be seen again until very, very recently on DVD. But I had the great fortune of seeing it in 3D for the very first time. This is back before 3D was a bullshit gimmick. This is back when 3D was first just kind of coming back to movie theaters. It was actually, I think it was one of the first theatrically released films to employ it. But I saw it on Halloween 2006 with my dear cousin Stephanie. Wonderful day. Wonderful film. But that's a topic for another day. We're talking about Santa's Sleigh, Nick.
This is a very incoherent sort of podcast, isn't it?
This is probably the most incoherent movie podcast we've ever done together.
That's all right.
I mean...
Because this movie is less about a coherent arc than it is about moments.
Not to say
together
that...
together by a concept.
Yeah, not to say, though, that it doesn't have a coherent arc. I mean...
Well, it does, but it's less about that and more about these little moments that are like, ha, he took a holiday trope and turned it into a weapon.
Yeah, or he destroyed the town nativity scene and beheaded one of the wise men.
He didn't behead Jesus?
That was one of the wise men.
Oh, okay.
As you'll recall, Nick, Jesus was an infant.
Aw. See, I clearly need to brush up on my Christian mythology. Because I thought the grown man was Jesus at a nativity scene.
No,
so
it was indeed one of the... One of
it was
the,
still
one
amusing to watch Santa behead the wise man.
Behead the wise men. Now that we're talking about like crazy things Santa does, let's talk about... Let's for realsies. For realsies. Let's talk about some of the kills.
Okay. He takes a sharpened, what's it called? Candy cane and stabs it in this guy's face.
A guy who was attempting to mug him, but I'll have you know.
Who wants to mug Santa? That guy deserved to die.
Well, in addition, not only was it that Santa, but it was that Santa posing as a Salvation Army Santa, ringing the bell and getting the change, and this motherfucker comes up behind him like garrote wire and tries to mug him. And no, he's like, no. Here's a candy cane in the eye, you bastard. And it's amazing.
It is. And he uses the star on the top of a Christmas tree as a throwing star.
This is all... You know what? Look, before we continue, let's do recount the amazingness of the opening scene. We did mention all these really, really famous people. Fran Drescher, Chris Kattan, Rebecca Gayhart, James Caan. All these people in the first film. But they, let's see. Fran Drescher gets her hair set on fire and then is drowned in a punch bowl full of eggnog.
Amazing.
Chris Kattan is basically kicked to death. He gets kicked in the chest and is just dead. Rebecca Gayhart, how does she get out?
I don't know which one she is.
She's the curly-haired one.
Is she the one who gets hit in the head with the table leg?
I do believe she is, yes. And then, of course, James Caan gets his hands stabbed into the table. And then how does he get it? Oh, he just, like, slams his head to the table until it just, like, snaps his neck, basically. I'm going to assume. And then there's one of the non-famous Masons who gets a Christmas star thrown into their back, Chinese ninja star style.
And James Caan, after getting his hands pinned to the table with forks, gets a turkey or chicken bone shoved in his mouth, and then Santa just, like, slams his head down onto the table, presumably impaling him.
Oh, is that what you thought happened?
Yeah,
what
did you think happened?
I didn't. I just thought he just slammed his head on the table. I mean, considering he just killed Chris Kattan with a kick.
Maybe that's what happened.
I figured he just banged his head against the table so hard he, like, popped it. You know, just,
well, lucky
like,
for us, the Wikipedia page has a body count. So
that
we
is
can
a,
go through it.
That
one
is
by one.
A glorious thing. Let's go through the body count. So we mentioned
one through six is the Mason family
and
their
dog. The dog who gets kicked across the room. That's the first person or the first figure of the Mason family.
Well, let's just mention how incredibly awesome Santa's entrance is. They're sitting at the table squabbling. Evidently, one of the sisters is in love with the brother because she. Well, and vice versa.
Brother-in-law.
Okay.
I assumed that actually, no, it seemed like Fran Drescher, the mother, was in love with her son-in-law, Chris Kattan.
Well, but, he's sticking his hand up her skirt and everything. It's very inappropriate because of their family, regardless.
It's true.
And they hear this noise in the chimney, and this soot comes pouring out of the chimney. And then Santa's legs hit the floor, and he busts through the wall.
As only Gilbert can.
And then he proceeds to kill them all. That's the first six people to die.
Number seven is Mrs. Talbot, a bitchy old woman, who comes into the deli just cursing up a storm and making trouble for Saul Rubinek. And she gets into her car after she's done with her deli dealings. And gets run off the road. Let me tell you something, Nick. I mean, you remember this. We were watching the scene, and Sansa in his sleigh, spelled the correct way. I feel like we should have mentioned. I mean, that was probably pretty obvious. Sleigh here in the title, Slay. Just making sure you knew, kids. But in terms of this sleigh, we're talking about the vehicle, sleigh, Sleigh.
Yes.
I hope to God I spelled that correct. You know, I was a 2-time city spelling bee champion, Nick Melton.
I did.
I was indeed. I really hope I don't. I mean, blame it on the alcohol. Isn't there a song called "Blame It on the Alcohol"?
I don't know.
I think there is. Anyway, Mrs. Talbot, elderly woman, run off the road by Santa. It says, I don't think that's doing it justice.
No, it isn't.
Santa puts his buffalo, his hell deer, up to ramming speed. The buffalo, I'm going to keep calling it a buffalo because that's what it is, rams into the back of the car and sends the woman skidding off to the right where she hits a snowbank and flips over in the air. It's awesome.
She deserved it because she was a bitch.
She was just an old twat. That's what she was.
It's really nice that you said that. number eight.
She was an old wooden ship used in the Civil War era. It's like diversity.
Number eight was the street punk who got stabbed with the candy cane.
That's right.
A couple of strip club people get killed.
Yes, we have a strip club valet who is at first knocked out when he comes to take the sleigh to a parking space, and eventually, as we discover. Eaten by the quote-unquote hell deer, the buffalo. He spits out
his hat
that says valet.
But meanwhile, Santa is also apparently in a frisky mood, so he goes into the strip club and proceeds to kill two of the bouncers. The first one is strangled by using a wreath, I believe.
He snaps his neck with a wreath.
That's amazing. And the second one is thrown by Santa onto a bartender's knife.
Yeah, I remember when we came into that scene, there was that bartender kind of just toying around with that knife, and I was like, oh, that's going to be something he used in a minute.
And he did.
He made that knife disappear.
A couple of the bartender and the bartender's attendee are crushed under a table by Santa.
Somehow I missed that one.
It wasn't very...
notable?
It wasn't very well shot, the way that they got crushed. It just sort of looked like he kicked them under the table and that was it. But apparently he crushed them.
Number 14 is a truck driver who is... Oh, this is great.
No, we have to talk about the setup as well as the kill.
So Santa comes into this strip club and you've got your skanky ladies and their skanky Santa outfits dancing around the poles and such. A lot of boobs in this scene. A lot of naked breastesses, as they say.
That's a Christmas gift from them to you.
Yes, if you enjoy naked breastesses, and who doesn't every now and again?
Even I do.
The point is, strippers.
Yeah.
I wish I could just end the sentence there, but I can't. But anyway, indeed, there is a truck driver who's a patron at the strip club at the time. We should also mention that Dave Thomas's pastor is at that strip club. He escapes before this happens. He leaves... I wouldn't call it escapes. He leaves before this even starts, so he didn't actually see this happen. But he was there, because that's the kind of man he is. But this truck driver, who's a patron at the strip club, he's sitting there enjoying his lap dance.
And he's like, this guy's not going to come in and bust up my lap
dance. Yeah, he ain't having that, but Santa ain't having
I made him
either.
Sound like a fop. I made him sound like a gay dude.
No,
you're not going to bust up my lap dance.
Mm-mm. What just happened there?
I don't know.
Anyway, Santa notices the stripper pole. He rips it out of its you know, hinges or whatever.
But not before.
Not before wiping it down with Windex. You can't
beat
it.
Santa has some hygiene problems, evidently.
I wouldn't say a hygiene problem. I think that's just smart thinking. Even with gloves on, you don't want to imagine the kind of venereal diseases or just general... nude lady diseases you might catch.
That is gross.
But anyway, he proceeds to... I forget how... How does it get electrocuted? I'm trying to remember.
I think he knocks it into like a lamp or something in the ceiling and
electrocutes
the pole.
Yes, he shoves the pole into a light up in the ceiling of the building and basically uses it as a conductor to electrocute this truck driver to death.
And I guess we are to assume that the rest of the strippers die in the fire that he sets to the That is like the first instance of a really interesting power that he uses several times in the movie.
Indeed.
That we should explain.
He pulls out a lump of coal, the traditional Christmas lump of coal, blows into it, causes it to smoke and cinder, and throws it to the ground where it immediately causes this massive blaze as though the floor were coated in oil.
And then after that point in the film, he can sort of just shoot burning coals out of his mouth at any given point.
Yeah.
Like projectile weapons.
I don't mind.
No, me neither. I think it's awesome.
Oh, shit.
What?
I shouldn't have said that.
What?
I don't mind.
You don't mind? He doesn't mind.
Let's just say I didn't invent that a particular delivery of that line in this episode.
Well, thanks for giving it away.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, we also have two children blown up by explosive presents.
That is one of the best moments of this film. It's the most random cutaway. It's not even, I mean, we barely have a minute to think about it. We cut to this just normal, typical, this typical family home, the parents and the grandparents, and there's these two little boys who have such potty mouths. I forget what they say. It's
their breasts.
Like,
they
know,
say something. Can we open our motherfucking presents now?
Yeah, shit, man. Just, you know, it's ridiculous. And awesome. The two kids are sitting there and they open up their presents as the parents watch lovingly. And as the kids open their presents, we hear the sound of an explosion and cut back to the two little boys.
And their heads are missing.
Their heads are missing and their bodies are pretty much made of charred ash. It's amazing.
It's awesome. And they so deserved it.
They certainly did, because kids are stupid.
I feel like all of these were fairly early in the movie, because the next kill, I feel like, is before Nicholas Yulson is even aware that there's an evil Santa on the loose.
This is actually how he's made aware, really.
Yeah.
He comes to his work.
So let's recap that Santa has killed 22 people in, like, the first half hour of the movie.
That is how great a movie this is. This movie is only 78 minutes, so, I mean, that is almost half the movie, but still.
Yeah.
Nicholas Yulson goes to his job at the deli to find his beloved manager and the wonderful, played by Saul Rubinek, Mr. Green. He's beaten and impaled upon a menorah. He's hanging from the wall by his neck with a menorah through his throat, which is hilarious and also sad, because Saul Rubinek is a delight, and what the fuck did he do to deserve that?
But he's Jewish.
But also, Bill Goldberg is Jewish. So what the hell does that mean?
That's probably why Bill Goldberg felt entitled to use a menorah as a weapon.
Indeed. And I mean, and once again, this film was written and directed by the very Jewish David Steinman.
So, after that guy gets killed, there's the police officers.
We have Chief Cock, spelled like the bathroom sealant. Chief Cock and his officers, they're tasered, stabbed, impaled.
Hey. Chief Cock dons his gay apparel.
Indeed.
Sensing a theme here.
Yes, but I want to read the description they have on Wikipedia specifically. Chief Cock and the officers, tasered, stabbed, impaled, and generally killed by Santa. You can't beat that description.
Well, I think there's that one guy on the floor that they don't really show you how he died.
Right.
So, he's just sort of generally dead.
It's true.
So generally killed.
But Chief Cock does lead us to a great line coming up. Nicholas and Mac are driving down the frozen streets of Helltown Trip, driving away from the police station. Nicholas had been there because he was brought in for questioning. They assumed he might have had something to do with the murder of Mr. Green, but eventually they let him go for whatever.
They sort of realized from the beginning that this little kid probably had nothing.
Yeah, it's a bit much. But anyway, they're driving through the car, and I don't even remember what brings it on, but someone says something about, like, you know, gosh, the chief sucks. Cock? Yes, cock. I love it.
That's the sort of level of dialogue that you can expect from this film.
There is a lot of great... I want to bring up one more line. I know this is a little ways before what we just talked about. There's a scene in which Mac, once again played by Emily DeRaven, brings Nicholas her Christmas gift to him, which looks to be like a knockoff of a Transformer. It's not certainly not a real Transformer, but it's intended to, you know, be, you know, it's, you know, Judge Reinhold finally getting his weenie whistle, you know, and
my weenie whistle,
you know. Anyway, the point is, she gives him that, and I forget what he said. He's like, "I feel happier than a Make-A-Wish kid."
Yeah,
there are so many, like, offensive lines like that. I love this movie.
And what about the dude with the voice box?
Oh, gosh, we'll wait for that. Because we also have Christmas carolers. Oh, gosh, this is amazing.
I like the way that Wikipedia describes this.
Christmas carolers, dispatched by a number of various wrestling moves. It is interesting to know, and even Paul Chapman noticed this, in this scene, Santa has come to the Yulson residence to find the Yulsons.
Because he saw their picture on the wall of Mr. Green's deli.
Indeed.
So I guess he figured, it's time to...
Get my revenge,
because he noticed that the grandpa was in the photo.
Indeed.
And by this point, we haven't yet had the dramatic revelation that grandpa is the angel.
The angel, yes. But one thing I had to mention, first off, I love how, in fact, he does indeed dispatch them through a number of various wrestling moves, including, I mean, this is so awful and awesome at the same time. He picks up a lady caroler and lifts her up, like, you know, bench presses her, basically, and then drops her just unceremoniously to the ground where she hits the steps of the house and immediately her neck snaps. It is so fucking awesome.
This movie is just fucking awesome.
Yes, it is. Indeed, he follows them through the house to Grandpa Yulson's bunker, basically. And the grandpa and, of course, Mac and Nicholas, as it were, they head out to the garage where they are attempting to jump onto snowmobiles to escape Santa. Fortunately, they don't make it out in time. And Santa has his hell deer run down for old Grandpa Yulson, played by Robert Culp. And, of course, followed by that great line, "Grandpa got run over by a reindeer."
In context, it makes a bit more sense, because if you were to just hear that line, you say, why wasn't it Grandma?
Because it's Grandpa.
He got run over by a reindeer.
Robert Culp has a penis. I kind of wish we'd saved that for the stinger.
I wish we had.
But anyway, we actually only have one more death in this movie.
Yeah, after Nicholas Yulson is aware of Santa's presence, the body count slows significantly.
Yeah, it really just becomes more of a race against the clock.
And a chase movie.
It becomes a comedic chase movie, in which a flawless piece of down outerwear is just...
destroyed.
Mangled by a gift grenade and or the horns of a hell deer. I'm sorry. I'm emotionally bothered by this. this is the kind of man that I am. we do have one last death, and it is, of course, Pastor Timmons, played by the great Dave Thomas, who is impaled after being blown out of Santa's sleigh. He literally falls to his death, landing on top of a flagpole and slides down. Kind of like, I mean, they used to do that on South, I think they did that on South Park, like, twice with Kenny.
Yeah.
He's died that way twice. That's all the kills. Oh my gosh, this movie. What else is there to say about this movie? I mean, we've basically discussed the plot. It's a crazy holiday horror film. Horror comedy. Comedy horror, more. Comedy. It's like, you know, the old argument of, you know, Crayola crayons. Is it red, yellow, or yellow, red? This is red, yellow. This is comedy horror.
we should mention that at the end there's a convenient dramatic twist where everyone just assumes that the pastor, having been found impaled, is the killer. But then we are shown that Santa is, in fact, still alive and is boarding a plane flight to the North Pole.
Which I wasn't even aware that was a thing that you could do.
Well, evidently, there is an airport in the North Pole.
Apparently, and it's...
I don't think there really is in real life.
No, I don't think so either.
But then again, he could check a sack in for...
A massive sack that may or may not include weapons and or human bodies.
I would hope both.
Me too. We have the credits. As I mentioned, I could have sworn... Because when I watched what little of this I did on Spike TV, there was a post, not a post-credit scene, but a post-movie scene, if you will.
Well, you know, they edit things for cable. They sometimes put in deleted scenes.
Perhaps they did. And I mean, I guess it made a lot more sense for a TV viewing audience. But I remember one thing. They do the Where Are They Now, which is kind of a strange thing to do for a movie like this. To do a Where Are They Now segment where, this person ended up doing this. Nicholas ended up, blah, blah, blah. And the one thing I remember specifically is that on the Spike TV airing, and maybe on this DVD, maybe we accidentally skipped it with that skipping DVD, they mentioned that on her way home, Mac got lost. Emily DeRaven is on Lost.
Ah.
See, it's a little pun. A little pun on what she does currently when she's not in this film. That's what that is.
It is stupid.
Nick is now looking at the trivia on Wikipedia. Anything that you want to notice?
Well, it says, well, we touched on this, although this is a Christmas movie, it stars a large number of well-known Jewish actors.
Bill Goldberg, Saul Rubinek, James Caan, Fran Drescher, and Chris Kattan.
In the opening credits, the movie plays on the fact that Santa is an anagram of Satan.
Well, duh. As Bill Goldberg was a professional wrestler until 2004, there are numerous references to his wrestling career within this movie. Before Santa kills Mr. Green, he delivers Goldberg's signature move, the spear. You remember me getting excited about seeing the spear.
I do remember that, yeah.
When Santa kills the carolers, one of them is given a gorilla press drop. That's the one that snaps her neck, I'm going to assume. When Santa is walking through the Yulson's home, Goldberg's entrance music can be heard in the background. That's one thing I got really happy about, is when he first steps out of the door, that... It's so sad that this was before your time. I wish you could have seen Goldberg on WCW. And even in his brief run on WWE, he did have a brief run. But he's so wonderful. But I do want to mention one last thing. It mentions after the credits. This is one thing we didn't miss. After the credits, we cut to Sansa. We're going to assume sitting in his workshop with his list, looking for, you know, what's going to happen next year. And he looks at the camera and says... Who's next? That was his catchphrase in the old WCW days, as he had that, you know, that winning streak, you know. But that always makes me laugh. The very thought of it.
Nicholas Yulson is apparently a geek, because when he references Christmas presents, he mentions Optimus Prime and Castle Grayskull.
Castle Grayskull from the He-Man.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Masters of the Universe, yeah.
Amazing. Also, he evidently wanted, what was it, like a Happy Bake Oven?
They refer to it as a... Mini Bake Oven, but of course they are referring to the Easy Bake Oven.
This might help explain how he knows what kissing like a guy is like.
As Robert Culp kind of refers to him, he's a bit of a Sally. He's a bit of a Sally.
He is. When Nicholas logs onto his computer, he does a search for Santa on Whoya rather than Yahoo, and finds a Santa tracker on Gonad. Rather than NORAD.
Yeah, the folks at Gonad... Which
are kind of douchebags.
They are dicks, because he asks them in earnest.
Is your Santa tracker real? And they say, how old are you? He says, 16. And they say...
Perhaps your parents haven't had the conversation with you.
Santa's not real, and neither is this tracker. Like, wow. Yeah. They don't have any Christmas spirit, do
not
they?
Not at all. But I'm trying to remember the exact tune of the Hoo-Yah Yahoo theme.
It was just like, Hoo-Yah!
Hoo-Yah!
The origin of Santa Claus is told in stop motion style, reminiscent of the Rankin Bass television Christmas specials, which
like
we already mentioned.
Rudolph and the Year Without a Santa Claus.
Towards the end of the film, Nicholas can be seen wearing a Flin Flon Bombers jersey, which is a Junior A hockey team playing out of Flin Flon, Manitoba, in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League. I don't know what relevance it has to the movie, but I just started reading the trivia, so I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's about it. I mean,
just a lot of Christmas puns,
a lot of Christmas puns, a lot of Christmas-related kills. Really, with the exception of the strip club scene, almost every single death in this movie involves some sort of Christmas item.
Yeah.
With the exception of Chris Kattan being kicked to death. and the knives in James Caan's hands. But, everything else is pretty much based on some sort of Christmas item.
Yeah.
Reindeer.
It's wonderful.
Gift grenades.
Those
bastard gift grenades.
Yes. Before we started watching this movie, we found on YouTube the trailer for Santa's Sleigh replaced entirely by video footage of Futurama.
That we did.
That was awesome.
That was awesome. We urge you folks to check that out.
You just have to go look Santa's Sleigh trailer, and underneath the real trailer will be the same trailer, except all the video footage is replaced with Futurama.
And
keep
it's
the dialogue.
It's actually a really great... It's a really great job.
They've done it really well, yeah.
It's really remarkable. They've matched the dialogue so perfectly to the footage.
One moment that I really liked was, they have that introduction where they're talking about how Santa just spreads good cheer, and then when in the trailer they mention, but this year, all bets are off. They do the scene in Futurama where the Santa robot's eyes flip over, revealing him to be evil. Right on time with them saying this year all bets are off. I love that. And it's a little detail, but I thought it was amazing.
It's a really great video. We urge you to check it out. But, Nick, what more is there to say about Santa's Sleigh?
It's amazing, and everybody needs to see it immediately.
Well, actually, let me preface that. Do you have any more topics we want to cover?
No, I think we covered a lot of the biggies.
Well, like I said, there's not
a whole lot of substance in this movie.
Indeed. Well,
it's just
fun. I will do my part that I always do and say, even though this is a collaborative presentation, I'll do my job and say, Nick Melton, final thoughts on
Santa's
Sleigh. You son of a hua.
A hua?
Yeah, I don't know why.
You can't have a pie without Cool Whip.
You're acting weird. That one doesn't even have an H in it.
Ho, ho. Whoa! Oh, we probably mentioned that. Ho, ho.
Hoes! As Santa walks into the strip club. But seriously, Nick, final thoughts on Santa's Sleigh.
I can't believe I've never seen this before. It is unbelievable and is the most fun you'll have at a Christmas movie. Unless you really like those heartwarming Christmas movies. And yes, there is a place for those, and I do like them, and they are a perennial part of my household. But sometimes you want something a little different, a little naughty. And in this case, seeing a professional wrestler impale people with menorahs and throw burning hot coals at people is very amusing.
It truly, truly is.
Not to mention it features a really derivative, entirely synthesized score that makes use of Christmas carols as action music.
Yeah, we didn't mention enough of
that.
That
was awesome. But A Carol of the Bells actually made a remarkably effective suspense cue.
It really did. And in addition, there are a lot of moments in this movie, not to derail our final thoughts segment, there are a lot of moments in this movie where it becomes, I think it's very clear that they wanted other songs and they had to replace them. Specifically, there's a scene in which Nicholas and Mac are driving a car, or driving a truck as it were, and she's listening to some weird Christmas rap song that has the same beat as the Run DMC Christmas classic Christmas in Hollis. And I'm very certain that's what they really wanted, but they couldn't get it. It's a shame, really. It's an absolute shame.
Yes, it is. Also, Santa has a really good-looking suit. Whoever did the costume design for Santa really pulled it off.
This movie, in terms of visuals and in terms of, like, this is a really well-made movie. It really is.
I'm not sure I bought that a 1,000-year-old Santa sleigh would have rocket jets on it and stuff, but it was
still awesome.
Of
course he had to modernize, Nick.
He's got a 1,000 years to make up for.
Indeed. But shall I share my final thoughts?
Yes, go ahead.
Final thoughts on Santa's Sleigh. Jeff Heatherly, here we go. Awesome, awesome, awesome sauce. This movie, like I said, this movie means a great deal to me because it really is the nexus of my podcasting universe. I love it because I love Bill Goldberg and I wish he did more things. I think it's extremely well and wittily and offensively written, which is awesome.
we are going down in history.
I can't believe we forgot about that guy. There's a guy with a...
And with a voice box, because he smoked too much.
But he still smokes.
Yeah, he still smokes. Like, what is it he says at the end? It cost me a lung. And also your vocal cords.
And the whole crowd of hunters laughs. That's the kind of movie this is. That's the kind of movie that I'm glad it is. That's the kind of movie you should be watching. Like I said, as Nick said, I also think that there's definitely a place for those wonderful Christmas classics. I would, of course, I'll be honest, I would go to those easily before I would go to this. Not to this movie's discredit, but that would be the first place I would look. But if you are looking for something alternative, I would, of course, recommend Kevin Spacey and Dennis Leary and The Ref. But if you can't get The Ref... Not to say that this is like a third or fourth choice. This is all, you know, out and out awesome. But Santa's Sleigh, it's the tops. It's just the tops.
I would agree.
There was a pause there.
There was.
We'll see what happens to that. But, you know, Nicholas Melton, host of Cinemantics, you know, when we did our Halloween episode in which we both covered Hocus Pocus, I was quick to mention, of course, that on the OUP side... after we conclude the Cinemantics portion, we'll be discussing very briefly a few more Christmas memories. It's a bit of an OUP-only bonus, but as that is a thing, are you ready to wrap things up, Nick Melton?
Yeah, I think we're...
All right, then I will leave you to... I'll go ahead and say, after he says this on the OUP side, stay tuned for more discussion, but Nick, do your thing.
All right, you have been listening to Cinemantics, the podcast about movies good and bad. Mostly bad, in collaboration with the Original and Original podcast.
Heyo!
I am your host, Nick Melton.
I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I would like to thank you all for joining me. Have a Merry Christmas, everyone. And we will sign off by reminding you that, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus.
And we're back! And I just tapped my computer. I'm sorry, it has that little wave on it that makes it look like there's a fan. Welcome back, OUP listeners. As we continue our discussion of holiday things, we've just discussed this wonderful film, Santa's Sleigh, because it is amazing. But Nick Melton, I mentioned to you, much like in our Hocus Pocus coverage, I would like to conclude the OUP side with a bit more Christmas memories. Now, as I mentioned to this to Nick before we started recording, I don't want to talk about Christmas memories in general. What I really want to focus on, because pop culture really does seem to be our
forte.
Our milieu.
Our Will Forte.
That wonderful man. Star of MacGruber, the movie, coming soon. But indeed, I wanted to talk about something very specific, and that would be great television Christmas episodes. You had a few in mind. I'm going to let you go ahead and kick things off.
Okay. Well, first and foremost, the Futurama Christmas episodes are both classic. Specifically the first one, because that is when John Goodman provides the voice of evil Santa.
I have seen clips of that one. I was going to say, isn't John Goodman Santa?
Yeah. The second one, it's not John Goodman, but the guy that they got to replace him sounds enough like him that it's not really that noticeable.
Right.
And the Christmas episodes from 30 Rock.
Oh, gosh. And they just keep getting better.
They really do. I think the one that they just aired last week, is...
As of this recording,
is the best one they've ever done.
Season 4. Yes.
Yeah, that's all I have to say.
Oh. Well, what can I say but go ahead and start with the tops, as Nick goes to, I'm going to hopefully say, turn down the heat?
Yes.
Thank you. It was getting very steamy in this place, and it wasn't just me. But no, in terms of great Christmas episodes, I've got a lot to discuss, but I want to go ahead and start with the one that is the absolute best in my eyes. And that is, of course, the Christmas episode of the beloved cult classic television series, My So-Called Life. The episode, what is it called? So-Called Angels. That's the name of the episode. This show is only one season, so you know where to find it. But it was a great episode. Are you aware of My So-Called Life, Nick? Are you aware of its existence?
I'm aware of its existence, yeah.
This episode is just amazing. I don't want to spoil anything because I really do want you to seek it out. I'm suddenly realizing that this conversation, this continuation, is going to be a few scant minutes for the OUP listeners, but I just did want to talk about these briefly. The one thing that really comes out of that episode, though, that I really want to discuss, and I'm sure it's playing underneath me as I speak right now, is the wonderful song Make It Home by Juliana Hatfield. Juliana Hatfield is just a mainstay of indie music for years. And in the episode, she plays a homeless girl in a local area who Claire Danes' Angela Chase meets, and she's always playing this song on her guitar. And my fan is indeed running. I'm sorry, I'm suddenly noticing that this is going to be one of those episodes where you can hear the fan. I apologize, listeners. It seems to always happen.
Also, I had the heat on.
That may have done something indeed. But what am I talking about? I'm talking about my so-called life, the episode So-Called Angels. Amazing, amazing episode. The other thing I want to talk about, Doctor Who. Doctor Who, thus far, four... Yes, I'm going to count them as... Actually, no, five wonderful Christmas episodes, because I would actually count the first season episode of The Unquiet Dead as a Christmas episode. Do you recall The Unquiet Dead?
Is that the one with Charles Dickens?
That is indeed the episode with Charles Dickens.
Booyah!
In the episode, the Doctor and his companion, Rose Tyler, meet up with Charles Dickens in the final year of his life as he's doing a public reading of A Christmas Carol, and they deal with some sort of otherworldly ghosts that I won't really describe too much. I'm suddenly realizing this may have been a mistake, because I really can't elaborate much more than that. They have that one. They have the second season Christmas episode, which, of course, introduces David Tennant as the Tenth Doctor. And that is, of course, what is the episode called? I believe it's called... I really don't remember, actually. The Christmas Invasion, that's it.
I really don't remember, actually, is a pretty good episode title.
Yeah, that would be pretty great. But the Christmas Invasion, in which aliens invade London and cause all kind of shenanigans.
On Christmas,
of course. It's Britain. Why not on Christmas? In which, of course, the Tenth Doctor is still regenerating, so he can't really help until the very last scene, in which he comes in like a badass and has a duel with an alien. Oh, magic. Season 3's Christmas episode is the episode known as The Runaway Bride, which introduces the character of Donna Noble, played by Catherine Tate.
I love her.
She's wonderful. It's really... That episode doesn't focus too much on Christmas so much as it's the story of the episode. It just happens to be happening around Christmas. It's not so much focused on Christmas as those first two. And then, of course, there's the fourth season Christmas episode, Voyage of the Damned, in which the Doctor travels and ends up on a futuristic... Space Titanic, basically.
Titanic.
She's made of iron, so... She will sink.
Should you be steering between the comets?
What?
Oh, Futurama reference.
Oh.
Was that Brannigan is steering the Titanic?
Oh, I don't think I've seen that episode, actually.
Oh, well, it's parodying James Cameron's Titanic.
She's built like a steakhouse, but she handles like a bistro.
That is not the Titanic.
No, it's not. It's the Palme d'Orbit.
That is like the most clever name for a restaurant ever.
Yes. And then of course there was the most recent Christmas episode. Now Nick has not seen it yet, so I won't spoil too much about it, but it's the episode The Next Doctor, which came out last Christmas 2008, with guest star David Morrissey.
Is in fact not the Next Doctor.
Oh, you already knew that?
Yeah.
Oh, then... Oh,
Matt
cool.
Smith
oh,
is
well,
the
duh.
Doctor.
Then, sir, there's nothing to spoil. He's not the Next Doctor. It's a wacky dramedy of errors in that episode when you learn why he is so convinced that he's the Doctor. It's really actually kind of tragic. But that's a really great one. I'm suddenly realizing how uninteresting this idea was.
Well, it was a good idea in concept.
It really was. I don't want to cut it out, though. I apologize to OUP listeners. We just came off that awesome movie, and now we're just rambling about TV shows. I'll tell you the truth, Nick. I don't mean to bring the house down, and I don't mean that in the positive way.
Right.
But to be honest, today is December 14th, December 15th, technically now. And I got to tell you, I'm not feeling Christmas at all.
Not really in the Christmas mood.
That's a reference to something.
Oh, there's a guy in line. He's a little cranky on Christmas. Man. And in front of him, there's a little kid pacing around like little boys do. And in his hands, he held a pair of shoes.
Oh, you shut the fuck up!
Nice. He's got some shoes. His clothes were worn and old. He was covered in dirt from head to toe. So he's basically a Dickensian street urchin.
Nick is referring to my favorite comedian, Patton Oswalt's recent animated short film based on his stage bit about the dreadful holiday song Christmas Shoes.
By a group called New Song.
New Song.
Why would you call your group New Song? You'll be stuck in an Abbott and Costello routine for the rest of your life.
Are you just going to quote the whole damn bit, Nick?
No.
Oh, man.
You don't know me.
I don't know. I don't know what just happened there. I was about to say, I don't know you, but that was just reinforcing what you said. That made zero sense. I don't know. I mean, thank you for bringing it to a high point. But in all seriousness, though, I mean, it's weird. The past few years, I'm 22, going on 23 here, and I just, Christmas is starting to lose its magic. I think it does have something to do with being away from home for the earlier part of
it
December.
It also has to do with time flying by quicker.
It really does.
The
older
you get, the faster time seems to go. When you're a kid, it seems like forever between Christmas. So every time it shows up, it's like, yes, finally, Christmas. Now we're like, is Christmas again so soon? You know, it doesn't really ever feel like Christmas because it doesn't feel like enough time has passed.
Right. Honestly, it feels like it's barely been a couple of months since last Christmas when I was in Alabama, or it was Alabama, visiting my sister for Christmas. One of the only two times I've been away from home for Christmas. Now, I gotta tell you, I mean, well, as glad as I was to see my sister, I don't care for being away from home on Christmas. I don't know if you have a traditional thing like me do. I'm clearly tired and drunk. I do not need to be talking anymore. Maybe this wasn't a waste. Maybe this is a couple supplemental minutes that people can enjoy briefly, I guess. Thinking about all the great Christmas episodes. I mean, we could go on for hours about, like, the classic Christmas episodes, like I Love Lucy. And,
which I have not seen.
It's a classic. What can you say? And then all of the Christmas episodes of Full House, which you also have not seen. Wow, you really have missed out on a lot. I could talk about the Christmas episode of Kenan and Kel, but...
Which I also have not seen.
Wow, sir. You know what? We're going to stop before this gets any more depressing.
We can talk about the Will and Grace Christmas episodes, which you have not seen.
Yeah, let's just...
Snap.
Let's just end this.
Sort of even out the fiasco a little bit. No, I'll just tell you one little bit I remember from the Christmas episode of Will and Grace. Jack is hired to design the window of a Barney store in New York by Parker Posey.
Ah,
and
yes.
And he can't do it, even though he said he could. So Grace does it for him as, like, a charitable Christmas thing. And, I sort of lost my train of thought. But Grace takes him out to look at the window, and he's like, wow, I could never have done this. I can't take credit for this. And Grace is like, well, Merry Christmas, Jack. And he's like, I didn't even think there was a Santa. And Grace is like, you think Santa did this? at the end of the episode, Will and Grace are standing in front of the episode, and Will's like, you do good work, Grace. And she's like, thanks. Jack thinks Santa did it. And then Will says something like, it's a Christmas miracle, or something.
Clearly Jack McFarlane needs to give Go Nat a call.
Clearly. On Ha You.
Ha You! No, it's Hoo-Yah. Hoo-Yah!
I thought that didn't sound
yeah.
right.
How are you? Oh, it's late. And we're just rambling now. But, that turned into a good ramble.
Yeah. I mean, it was entertaining.
Do you have any more, like, Christmas television memories to share?
No, I think,
It was a bit of an ill-conceived idea. It was just something I thought would be fun. But you know what was definitely fun?
Santa Slay,
because it was, in fact, the best movie of all time! Podcast. Indeed, the best movie of all time. That was weird so fast. Let me do it slower again. The best movie of all time. Santa Slay from 2005, directed by David Steinman, starring Bill Goldberg. Seek it out if you can find it. Honestly, it is just a charming little film about murder and mayhem.
Wonderful.
It's just wonderful. And I hope you've enjoyed this episode, including this petering out that just occurred. But we've had fun discussing it. I am tired and tipsy and hot. I'm going to go step outside, I think. I'm going to go stand in the cold.
That's great.
Get some wind on the back.
Okay.
I don't know why I'm telling the listeners this. They've got better things to do. Like, go spend Christmas with your family, people. This is airing on Christmas Eve. Go eat some damn turkey and tell your family you love them. I almost started to choke up there. I don't know why.
It sounded more like you were yelling at the listeners.
I did.
Chiding them for not spending time with their family.
Yes, go spend time with your family. And enjoy your holiday, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Nick Melton for stopping by. I mean, I'm thanking you even though the bulk of this was a co-production. And we should be thanking each other. Let me shake your hand. We done good, sir.
We did it. We went too far.
Oh, Dave Matthews. And on that note, thank you for listening. Once again, thank you, Nick Melton. And as always, go experience 7 days. Good night, and once again, happy holidays!
You're a strange man, Jeff.
I know.
This Christmas, I filled your stocking with my candy cane of joy. So have a very merry motherfucking Christmas. And the world will start rejoicing, and the choir will start to sing, and the lords will leap and give the ladies in waiting their five-ass golden rings, and the seven pipers will pipe in the eight-bit of milk.
Like it when I do it that way. That's not a real song.
Again!